Thank you, Pat. And thank Ruth for coming today. She's new to Weatherford, and so she's here. And we have Mona, right? That's good. Okay, well, we are just doing a review today, and you all have your review questions. I just thought of something. Who is supposed to do their little five-minute thing? Do we have anybody that's supposed to do their little introduction thing today?
We were to get them on the internet.
We don't have anybody signed up, so we'll just not do that today, I guess. Did everybody get the review questions? Did she email them?
Yes.
I guess I didn't look.
I couldn't get them off my computer. I didn't know how.
Yeah, you got to. I did. I pushed print, and Stan said, "You got to download it." And then my computer didn't even have the certain files, so he sent it to his, and I got it. So
somebody needs some. I have a blank copy. I have my copy. 1, 2, 3, 4.
But I don't use email.
Yeah, but I'll always have a copy here, so
we can share. You know, it's a review, so we'll wait a few more minutes. Waste more of my time. We will not be meeting for the next 2 weeks. We will be back January the 8th will be our first meeting back. And not the first week back the 8th, but the next week I plan on having a luncheon at the house, a potluck type thing. So just kind of keep that in mind and mark your calendars, and
if
all the stars line up, that should work out. Yeah, the 15th, January. So anybody have anything you want to share with us today? I don't know where all our young people are. I know Laura takes medicine. I guess she's out with that. Amy's out of town. Who else? Courtney? It's a busy time.
I tried to call her yesterday, and she wasn't here. She was going somewhere with Joy, I think.
I did see last night Bobby Holmes was walking, and
he said rehabbing.
I think he was going to go today to rehab close to his house somewhere, which is good, and he'll probably be there around a month. So, wow, and he's still on liquids while his esophagus heals. But he is up. That's good. He did have a touch of pneumonia, so getting up will be good for that, right? My hands are freezing. Let's see where we're going to be when we come back. Chapter 4. So I guess everybody can work on chapter 4 for when we come back to 8. And we'll do that. And then what does it say? Well, she's got several geography lessons down. So I guess we're going to be in the geography book for a while. Or maybe that's just, you know, I know she's doing these other lessons herself. So maybe if she gets one done, we'll plug it in there. I don't know what her plans are. That's fine. So,
well, lesson 5 of the geography books are review of lessons 2 through 4. So, okay. You all reviewed, right?
We are reviewing to death, but we need it. This is a lot to remember, isn't it? And my brain just doesn't work like it. Well, it never worked like it. Huh?
I don't know where the Dead Sea is.
Yeah. Do you think I can bend over? Been to Israel?
Yes.
Some of you. I thought some of you.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
So you got to see firsthand how
you know, when we got to the density, I expected it to be, you know, but there is the most beautiful thing here, so.
It's salt water though, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So nothing was underneath it, underneath the water.
But they had a place where you could get your ropes or clothes or whatever you wanted, and you could go out and swim in it. You don't sink, you just float.
Wow. Well, you know, they sell Dead Sea.
Salt,
you know, skin stuff and all, and it's, I think it's from Israel, so it's, I guess the healing of the sea salt water. I always tell my kids when their throats started hurting, we'll gargle with salt water. I thought I was crazy, but you know.
They tried,
though. Uh-huh, and they did a few times, but.
You wonder why the
one area will
be salt water. I guess it. Places.
Well, then it come from under the ground.
Yeah.
So I guess just in that area there was salt. I don't know.
Well, Salt Lake City, is that name come from a lake in that area or the salt flats?
I have no idea, but I know a place in New Mexico, going to Carlsbad Caverns one time, we stopped at a place that had salt. Do you remember, Linda? What? I don't remember. That's all I remember. I just remember seeing some salt. You know, it's something to do with salt. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I know outside of Texas, there's an area that's kind of like a salt flat. Rarely is the water in it. It's very salty.
Maybe that's where we stopped, but that's not on the way to Carlsbad.
No, but I
know. Yeah. Oh, I know. No. Okay, well, let's get started. We're on lesson one. And I'm just facilitating this. If y'all have any words of wisdom when we get to an answer or whatever, or want to share something, let me know. So we will just I guess we'll answer if you have it, fine. If you don't. Number one, how can we gain a better perspective of our friends and loved ones? Jean?
Well, we talked about being where they are, you know, seeing where people live. If you know people here, you know them on one level. If you're in their home, you know them another level. So that's kind of what this study's about.
Mm-hmm.
How can we really understand a little more about the people and events that we read about in the Bible?
And that just brought to mind, I know Josh is a teacher, and they make them go through some kind of class, which Dean probably knows, can explain this better than me. But because most of our kids are Hispanic in Castleberry now, but it's about money, to understand where these Spanish people come from and why they think like
that. Cultural awareness.
Cultural awareness.
Class.
Yeah. Yeah, and he was telling me some stuff, and I thought, well, that's kind of a good deal, because, of course, I sub, and I just see the kids, and, you know, to me, they should be like every other one, but that really gives you more of an understanding of where they come from and why they do what they do and a little bit of the way they think differently, because we do think differently. Even those from the north think differently than we do.
Well, culturally or not, I mean, race and ethnicity aside, if you have families that live in very different economic situations, or they live in a different geography. I mean, I always tell my sister-in-law she needs to move to Texas, and she says, oh, it's too hot. And I said, but I've never slipped on sunshine and broken my arm like you did. So, you know, there's just a difference in the way we live, mm-hmm. depending on where we are.
Right.
But you get used to it. Adaptability.
Adaptability. Okay.
Well, I'm a lot older than everybody else here. Did y'all notice? Anyway,
as I was growing up, in the area I lived was completely different than people who live in New York City or up in Washington State. It was just a different world. We're mixed much more now, and it makes much better communication between all of us. We understand each other better.
Right, right.
But I think what the book's trying to point out is that geography impacts us. It impacts the way we live, the way we think, and the way we do things. And that's why the study of history and geography of the Bible can be helpful.
Right.
And as Chris has been trying to talk.
I think maybe a better way to convey it would be if anybody's ever gone through, like, a family member when they passed, when they passed away and you're going through their things, and you end up learning more about them than what you ever would probably when they were still alive because of stuff written on scrap pieces of paper and little tiny things that you didn't understand why they even say. And it may have been affecting the environment that they were living in. And also, you know, going back through the geography, and it's no different than, you know, modern day archaeology. When you're going back through, you're picking up all the little pieces of people that were gone and trying to figure out why they lived the way they lived and understand it more.
Good. Thank you. Okay. And so, of course, in Bible days, that was a long, long time ago, and that's why we need to study this so we'll have more of an understanding of the way they lived back then, where they came from, and why they did what they did. And anyway, okay, number two, we need to understand that man has always been man. Bible men were just as human as who? As us. They were just as human as us. So, and history repeats itself too. So, you know, we need to know history so we can learn from the good things but not repeat the mistakes. Okay, no matter where man has lived, he's always been intelligent, doing whatever was necessary for what?
Survival.
Okay. We've always need food, a roof over our head, and there's one more thing.
Clothing.
Thank you. It left me.
Anything to make life easier.
Mm-hmm. And when you have, when you live off the land, you know, that's your entire, that's just about all you do is you know, keep the roof over your head. You know, when the wind blows it off, well, you have to put it back up and make your clothes for the different weather. And then, you know, you hunt your food. They couldn't go down and buy it and everything. So that's, they didn't have time for hardly anything extra. God gave man a law, but what did man do with that law? He broke it. Broke the law. Okay, one important thing that we learn from a map study is that we are better able to visualize early man's what? We've kind of already talked about that.
His life, how he lived.
Environment, his environment. Things around him and how he did things. Okay, one way to tell what a map shows is to look at what? This is tough.
The title.
Flashback to fifth grade. Okay, what does the scale of miles show on a map? Basically,
it's large or small.
Yep. Whether it's a small area or a large area. And that's one thing with this study that really, you know, I never just really thought about is how small of a very area it was that the Bible talked about. I mean, that's all there was, just that little part. So, you know, it just never really sinks in until you look at it closely and study it. So, the seas, rivers, mountains, and permanent landmarks show what features of a map?
Physical
features. Okay, whether there's hills or valleys or rivers or all that good stuff. Okay. This a political feature map is important because it shows us what?
Boundaries.
Political boundaries at a particular point in time. This is why a variety of maps may be necessary for the same place. And this is the thing that confuses me. Like it said, it changes so much, and I can't.
Oh, but you can.
We're going to get it. That's why we're doing this. Jean is going to make sure we get it. And I'm counting on that.
We'll see.
Oh, no, thank goodness for PowerPoint. So, yeah, okay. All right, why does the Bible map seem more confusing?
Covers many years.
In nations rise and fall, boundaries change, everything changes over the period. It's been a long time since
And we're not as familiar with it as we are our maps today. You know, we traveled. I still look at a map, and I still encourage my kids to look at the map, even though they had their little GPS they put it into, you know. They may be an hour off before they realize, and I'm like, if you would look at a map and know the towns you're going to go through, that would be a, you know, and you need to know that.
Well, and as confusing as it is, we can look at that today. How many of you have a globe that's 10 years old?
Throw it out. Yes, it is. They're pretty. They're colorful. I love globes. I will, but I'm going to keep the old one too.
But I was going to say, in our lifetime, we learned Europe as one way, and it's changed in our lifetime. It's the boundaries changed after the wars,
and just the Slavic nations all got new names and new boundaries. And so, you know, it's in fact, I lost a trivia game the other day because I said something about Russia was the answer, and the trivia game was built when it was the
USSR.
And I didn't get credit. I thought I should have.
No, no, we're wrong.
I was reared in Southern Illinois, and Southern Illinois is called Little Egypt. Had been, because the town where I came from was called Pongola. There is a little town that's in Egypt called Pongola. I have a map somewhere that shows that.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's a Thebes, and there's a Cairo, and I don't know, probably several others.
Oh, wow. Well, there's an
Egyptian?
No. There's an Odessa, Russia, or from Odessa, not Russia. But okay, let's go to the next page. Why is it important to study Bible maps?
Understanding.
Mm-hmm. To become familiar with God's people throughout their history.
I think the more you know about anything, maybe you don't need a particular point for anything, but the more you know the general knowledge just makes it more interesting and easier to learn something else to add to that.
Well, it does, and especially when there's so many different names for one thing, you know. You need to have a familiarity with all those names so you don't get confused when they talk about them interchangeably, you know.
It also helps make it real to us. It's when I teach little kids, even, we go to a map. Where did this happen?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just kind of helps us in our own way to relate to what happened when, even though it's history, maps may have changed, but we can relate better if we know where did this happen.
Exactly, and that's important for little kids because, you know, they're visual anyway, too.
And they have a hard time, at a young age, they can't separate fact and fiction. In fact, in his prayer for lunch yesterday, Cole thanked God and Jesus and Santa Claus because it all melds together when you're only three. And so to say this is real, this happened, here's where it happened, helps to make that separation.
Mm-hmm. Good. Good point.
This is another plus for Velma Stanley, but one year we had second graders, a few first graders, second graders in that class, and you know, she was so thorough about everything. Well, the first graders and whatever else we had been through everything twice already, or maybe even three times. So she worked all summer and fixed a MAPS
And when she taught, she spoke verbally from one occasion to the next. She carried, she didn't just tell one story and then drop them. She carried them clear through to the next story, and I don't remember any, for instance, right now. And but anyway, we went through the map with the maps, and they had, I don't remember what, I think they had to draw them on and mark the cities that were, they were studying about, but it was very thorough, and the kids just loved it. I think Kevin was in there when we did that.
She was such a good teacher.
Oh, she was.
She was. Okay, so the following events in correct chronological order, beginning from the earliest event. Okay, we're just going to go through these. Creations, one. What did you
say? I know that one.
Okay, number two, flood. Number three, Tower of Babel. Number four, promises to Abraham. Five, plagues in Egypt. Six, giving of the law of Moses. Seven, wandering in the wilderness. Eight, conquest of Canaan. Nine, judges. Ten, united kingdom. 11, divided kingdom. 12, Assyrian captivity. 13, Babylonian captivity. 14, the return from captivity. 15, years of biblical silence. 16, birth of Jesus. 17, establishment of the church. 18, Paul's preaching journeys. 19, Paul in prison in Rome. 20, the Roman persecution of church. And 21, the destruction of Jerusalem by the Romans. 22, or is that it?
That's it.
That's it. Okay. Says, don't be concerned if you didn't do too well, because that's why we're studying this. Okay, do y'all have any comments on this first chapter, Intelligent Being Man? Okay, a brief look at Bible lands. What's the earliest name applied to the land of Palestine?
Canaan.
Canaan. Canaan. Okay. Palestine was inherited by Abraham's descendants, and that's why the land was called what?
Promised land. Land of Israel.
This is one of those that there's several different names for. There's Canaan, the promised land, the land of Israel, and present-day Palestine. Those are all the same country, the same land that they use interchangeably depending on the different political or the different events and stuff.
It's not called Palestine today. It's called Israel. It's still called Palestine.
I think it...
The Arabs called Palestine.
No. I think they said they called it that today.
Israel too, but I mean,
yeah,
it's a disputed land.
Right. Okay. Says here, it said in the lesson that Palestine was used after the Bible days. So, okay, the word Hebrew means
stranger
or foreigner. And the descendants of Abraham were called Hebrews while in what country?
Egypt.
Okay. The descendants of Israel were called what name?
Hebrew.
Israelites, children of Israel. Yes, if you're a child of Israel, you're an Israelite. So.
And I think it's an important distinction, too, because They were called Hebrews while they were in Egypt. Why? Because Hebrew means foreigner, stranger. They were never assimilated. They were never Egyptians. They were always set apart. God kept them set apart. They lived in a separate area. They lived under a different rule, a different law. I mean, the Egyptians ruled it, but God's law. And then when they came out, when they were going to become a nation, they became the Israelites, the children of Israel. They were no longer foreigners and strangers. They were coming into their own at some point. They had to wander for a while first. But, you know.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, what name was first applied to those living in the southern kingdom? Which was Judah. Jews. And that was used late in the Old Testament. It wasn't used till 2 Kings, they said.
It came out of the Babylonian captivity where Judah was taken, and then they just shortened that name to Jew, from Judah to Jew.
Okay. Palestine is a pocket-sized country consisting of a territory of about how many square miles? 12,000. For comparison, the state of Alabama has 51,609 square miles. Okay, whoever wrote this book must have been from Alabama, because I don't... So here's what I thought. I don't know about Alabama. I'm going to do Texas. So what I did is I took the land area of Texas and the land area of Palestine, and I divided it. And this is approximate, but that would be a Palestine, and 22 Palestines could fit in Texas.
Wow. One thing on the map that's 14 miles, and we talked about how from Weatherford where I am to here is 20, you know. And
yeah, I made that down in the next deal. It says, to get an idea of how small the tiny country of Palestine is, indicate the approximate number of miles between the following cities. Well, from Dan to Beersheba, they have 150 miles. And I thought, okay, that's about from Fort Worth to Austin, 150 miles about.
That's far enough.
Yeah. And to Abilene that way. What other direction? I don't know. Okay, and the Mediterranean Sea to the Jordan Valley is 30 miles. So that's about from what, West Fort Worth to Dallas?
I don't think it's that far, but okay.
Well, if you're way west of Fort... What is...
Yeah, West Fort to Dallas.
And so, you know, that kind of gives us more of a visual of, or more of an idea. And then from Gaza to the Dead Sea, 50 miles. I put Hillsboro because, you know, I'm always traveling south. So those directions are, you know, I've got that here. And I'm sure the rest of you can just kind of, you know, when you go places, you can... relate that to places you go.
And they walked.
And they walked.
That's always comes back. I mean, from I used to commute to Richardson, less than about 75 miles. It took 2.5 hours in a car. You know, in a car. And they walked to these places.
Yeah. I think that's why the Apostle Paul traveled so many places by water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not all places, of course, because he couldn't get to it by water, but if you notice in the studying of Paul's travels, he took a ship here and there.
Sure.
A lot.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what term was applied to the west side of the Jordan River? It would have helped to have this map up, I guess, because it's Canaan, but I'm not a computer. Palestine served as a major trade route connecting what two continents?
Asia and Africa.
Asia and Africa. Okay, we are moving right along here. I think we're going to finish. Jean said we might not finish. I thought, I'm teaching, we'll finish. You do. You do. And that's okay. It's just not, you know, just not there. Okay, the geography of Palestine. Yeah, it might help. I don't know. Y'all may have your maps out. Look at it while we're answering these. I've been looking. It kind of reinforces that information there. The four distinct parallel zones that Palestine is divided into. Okay, we have the coastal plain, which is along the coast, of course. And the next one is what? The hill countries. And the Jordan Valley, which is the green. And then the Transjordan Plateau, which is this brown over here. So, you know, and it all kind of... Of course, it's narrower at the top than it is at the bottom, so... Okay, another name for the Mediterranean Sea is the Great Sea. Okay, the two fair weather harbors in Palestine were located at Joppa and Dor. And I'm sure y'all found those on your deal. It looks like they're about, what, 30 miles apart?
Pointed out that they're fair weather harbors because they're not really very good harbors. They're not very, they go in very far and protect from bad weather. So getting into the bad weather was more difficult to talk about that in one of our lessons somewhere.
Okay. Well, I wasn't sure when it said fair weather harbors what exactly that.
If they wanted to get out of the bad weather, that would do them much good because they don't go very many miles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't have that protection of the land all around them. They're just barely
forts. Okay. And what people came from Crete and settled in Gaza, inhabiting the southern portion of the coastal plain? Who?
I said the Philistines.
Philistines, yes.
Yeah,
yeah, the Philistines. Okay, the two cities in northern Palestine that were known for their excellent harbors were Tyre and Sidon. Doesn't look like those go in much either, but did they go in maybe
more.
Maybe the weather was a little bit different up there too, I guess, maybe. Okay. Y'all have any questions?
Has a different name today, doesn't it? I think it's not called Joppa. It's called something else.
I have no idea. Do you know?
I don't know. If you look that up for us, John. Let us know next time. If I can remember.
Okay. The two cities... Okay, we just did that. In the years between 25 and 13 B.C., who built a very expensive artificial harbor and called it Caesarea in honor of Augustus Caesar?
And,
yes, what an artificial harbor. How do you do that?
I don't know how you do it then.
Artificial?
I was thinking about that earlier, but all the equipment and things that are necessary, like to build a lake, and you've got huge diggers and cranes and all these things.
Land movers beyond.
Yeah.
And then the water.
Yeah, how do you block the water off where you're digging out the hole? And how do you dig the hole deep enough for those ships? He was there on the great on that one.
An artificial, that means like not real. I just don't.
Well, it means they dug it out. They created one as opposed to it being natural. It
okay, I gotcha. I've been in the fantasy land
and
too long.
That was probably decades, you know, years and years and years to create.
Oh, I'm sure. And I wonder how many thousands of people lost their lives doing it.
Mm.
So. Yeah, just the if you just think today about the big, you know, all the lakes in Texas except one are man-made lakes. So when you just think about the time, the expense, the equipment, the length of time it takes to do it, to build a lake, how in the world do you do it on an ocean?
I didn't know all but one are man-made lakes.
Maybe two, but Caddo Lake is a natural lake, and I don't remember if there's one more or not.
I thought
everything
there was
else
only
is,
one.
Everything else is man-made.
Wow.
In the introduction or first part of our book here, it tells about man in the beginning able to do. What they did back then is just, well, I just can't imagine how
right.
they did it.
Because they didn't have much.
Because we
they
have had... all these things today that helps us build.
Mm-hmm.
And how they built castles and
pyramids.
I mean, and pyramids, you just don't understand. Yes. But man had a great mind even then. God mm-hmm. made him able to do what he needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's a phenomenon.
It still amazes me how airplanes get up in the air. I'm just... I know, it's just...
The other day, there was a big plane flying over. I said, that shouldn't be up there.
It's teleporting as far as I can figure it out.
It's just... And I still, when one flies over low, I want to run out and look up, you know.
You know, God... Men want to deny the creation, but he not only created us, it was not just a body that was created, it was one that was fully functional.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't see that in anything else
right.
that could do that. So that's the thing that makes us.
I know, it is just truly amazing.
God.
And, you know, looking at babies now, you can just almost see from conception, it's just...
Yeah.
How can you deny that? Okay. The Lebanon mountain range in northern Palestine was the largest mountain range. Did I? Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. What are they? Coastal plains of Palestine is divided into three plains. The plain of Phoenicia, plain of Sharon, and the plain of Philistia. Y'all see those on your map? Philistia, Sharon.
Phoenicia.
Okay, Phoenicia is at the top. No, that's the plain of...
That's a valley.
I think on my... This is the answer sheet. I think I put... Plain of Sharon, plain of Philistia.
Okay, the valley of Jezreel comes out of the plain of Akko. Is that not true? Is that kind of how it goes?
On top of page 11, it says, talking about the plain, it says, this rich plain is real in the Old Testament and later Ashkelon along by the Greeks. Mm-hmm. God sold
Israel.
The Garden's Valley of Jezreel. Okay, well, I don't know. Sharon and
one up there right above Mount Carmel, it says the plain.
Yeah, but it says the southern.
Well, the coastal plains. Phoenicia, Sharon, and Philistia, right?
I know, but it's not showing that on this map here that she passed out. Maybe that's one of those map changes that
Well, it says in the second paragraph of 11, it says historically the coastal plain was divided into three portions. We've already mentioned the narrow plain of Phoenicia,
north of Mount Carmel.
Talked about Sharon and Philistia.
So
but you're right. There's the plain of Akko is also there.
Yeah.
So there's four, not three.
Okay.
Just says it.
All right. Let's go to 8. The Lebanon mountain range in northern Palestine was the largest mountain range. The range nearest the sea is called Lebanon, which is 10,000 feet above sea level, and the range to the east is called the Anti-Lebanons. So, Anti-Lebanons and Lebanons. Yes, Anti-Lebanons. Considered the northern boundary of Palestine during most of Bible history.
That's evidently one of those borders that keeps changing.
Maybe so. That will.
Probably who won the battle.
Okay, what river runs between Lebanon and the hills of Galilee? The Leontes River.
I never heard of that river till this class.
That's true.
Anybody else ever heard of the Leontes River?
No.
I've heard of the Leon River in Central Texas, but I guess that's Leontes. No, and you'd think being in the Bible lands and stuff, we would have heard of it. Okay, what area was the scene of some of Jesus' greatest work while he was on earth? Galilee. Sea of Galilee, and of course Stan and Yvonne had an opportunity to go to Israel, and Stan said it's you think of a sea being big, you know, a sea, but it's a lake.
It's shaped like a heart, I think.
Like a what?
A heart, I think.
A heart? Like a heart.
In the invisible heart. A lot of time in Jerusalem because they would kill him. So as you study the scriptures, you mostly find him in other places, not in the city of Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. That's my thought. It can't be struck down.
If you look at the shape of the Sea of Galilee on the map, yeah, it's not a February Valentine heart, it's a heart.
Yeah.
Yeah, human heart.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
That's why I still love my master to come with me.
Did you miss breakfast again?
Yes, of course.
Well, I guess for those of you who have trouble finding it, just look for the heart or ice cream cone. Anyway, it's not that big of a place. And isn't there mountains around it? Or not?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Anyway, when we went over there, they said that you ought to at least make 2 or 3 trips to Israel because you go so fast on those tours that you don't absorb everything.
Yeah.
I think Stan did, but I didn't.
Well, he absorbed a lot, but I'm sure even for somebody that does that, it would, you know, be very beneficial to go back and back. But because of the layout of the land and stuff, that's why the conditions can change so rapidly, you know, from calm to a storm, like in the Bible story. So one of the most important sections of the land commercially and militarily during Israelite history was what? The Valley of Jezreel. Okay, that looks like your husband. I think that's Jerry or
somebody with white hair.
Okay, so the Valley of Jezreel. What happened in the Valley of Jezreel? Y'all remember? Is that where David and Goliath was?
David and Goliath, I'm not sure.
That's what my first thought was, but I didn't think to research
there. I think we stopped there, but I was able to pick up some rocks.
Oh, really? Yeah, Stan brought back rocks, stones. Okay, moving right along here. The central hill country was the home of what three mountainous peaks? Mount Gilboa. I'm trying to find those as we speak so you can kind of have a visual. Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. how do you say that, Trism?
Gerizim.
Okay. What names usually apply to the semi-desert region between Beersheba and Kadesh Barnea?
The Negev.
And why was it named the Negev? Do y'all remember? I remember reading it, but I don't remember why it was named that. Negev called the South in the King James Version. Rolling hills of Negev called the South. The name's usually applied to the semi-desert region between Beersheba. Okay. It was fertile enough immediately after the winter rains, but it is dry and parched as the desert in the summer. So that's kind of unusual, isn't it, to be able to plant and stuff right after a long winter. What mountain juts into the Mediterranean Sea like a thumb? Mount Carmel. Okay, did y'all see Mount Carmel? Was it a big mountain or was it just like a hill? Sorry. Okay.
You could see the Sea of Galilee
if
it was clear. I mean, it was way off.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay. What city was the capital of the Philistines and the greatest trading center of ancient Palestine?
Gaza.
Gaza. And what city is the southernmost city in the land of Israel? No, this city receives its name because of a pact made between Abraham and Abimelech involving the digging of a well.
Beersheba. Abraham's well is still there.
Is it? I'm sure it's a big, they've got it blocked off and everything.
Just a hole.
Just a hole.
Is that water?
Yes, I brought back the water from it.
Okay, ladies, now we know the first three.
I'm impressed, Debbie.
I can do these reviews. I'll do the next one. Put me down for that. No.